All right, everybody, and welcome. This is Ash Hats Podcast, and today we decided that we're going to have our conversation and smokes about one sport that we tend to know a little bit about and that we love, and that's going to be football. I'm here with my co-host, Dustin, and we chose a very exquisite smoke for this particular podcast.
We did. We chose the Padron Anniversary Cigar 1964. Tends to be a longer cigar, so strap in. We're going to be talking about football, and we're pretty sure we can talk about football for 2 years straight if we had to.
This is the premier Padron. It's not necessarily the highest of the mark in terms of Padron cigars, but this is the cigar that Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, chose as the celebratory cigar for when the Patriots won their fifth Super Bowl. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we were here when we watched it, right?
We were here.
Was that the one with the Falcons?
Yeah, I believe so, if I'm not mistaken. It's funny because we watch so much football, and we're big football fans, high school all the way up to professional, that we oftentimes do smoke cigars. We get together and we enjoy the game and, you know, a couple drinks, a couple cigars, and we try to, you know, enjoy it as much as we can. I know it's been a little tough with everything that's been going on. We have to kind of do it solitary, but at least we can enjoy this together while we still
absolutely get. And funny about that night, because that game was such a blowout. None of us had intent of smoking a cigar until after the game.
That's right.
And it was 28-3 at halftime.
It was ridiculous. So we were like, the comeback.
Yeah. So we were like, well, screw this. The game's over. Right. None of us care about commercials. So we came out to where we are now. Right. We started smoking. Slowly but surely, we'd each get a notification. Oh, they're coming, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, nothing's going to happen. Don't
28-10,
worry about it.
28-10, you know. 28-17. And then somebody said, guys, we should probably go back in there.
I remember that.
Now, the reason I can't remember if it was their fifth or sixth was because I was having more than one celebratory consumption that night. I had a really good time that night.
I'm trying to think if I can remember that. I remember sitting on the floor after we started going back in and watching it, like, what is happening? Like, where'd the defense go? And it's like, they just fell apart.
And then TJ Griffiths, he put on Facebook, bet the overtime.
Oh, I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yep.
Bet the overtime. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? It had to have been Super Bowl 49, was it?
Maybe.
I'm not a Patriots fan or a Falcons fan, so my investment was zero.
And neither of us are going to be experts on any of these topics. We're regular Joes just watching football, smoking cigars, and that's neither of us has any investment in the Patriots or the Falcons. Or we'll talk about our favorite teams, and we'll talk about, you know, our experiences with high school football. And it's interesting that, you know, we've been lovers of the game for years, but at the same time, you know, we have lots of opinions about more than just the game itself. We're going to talk about, you know, what college football has done for essentially us, and we'll talk about betting. We'll talk about fantasy football. We have a lot to talk about in a short period of time.
All things football.
Right. We're going to do the light with a standard torch lighter. I'm actually using a single torch. I think Dustin's using the triple torch.
Oh, let's see. Yep, triple, and butane is always for me.
We both decided to do the straight cut on the cap. You know, the interesting thing about this, and from what I've read about this cigar, is that this is not your regular, everyday knock-around cigar. This is like the cigar you have after a wedding. Like, this is a smoke that is one of a kind, one time. Like, you enjoy the heck out of this thing, and that's what we're planning on doing.
Absolutely, and prior to us starting, we were discussing this podcast will be coming out December 1st, and it's a holiday time. And unfortunately, in the world that we live in, we won't be able to celebrate with our friends as we normally would with that celebratory cigar. So I'm happy we get to have one together.
I'm very happy. I'm hoping this isn't the last cigar. I'm hoping that, you know, things start to get better and back to normal, and Thanksgiving time and football go together hand in hand, so we could talk about that too.
Absolutely. And to stay on the COVID conversation, again, this is a dated topic, and it's crazy how that pandemic has affected football.
Oh, absolutely. Sports, and by and large,
all
basketball,
sports. Yeah,
baseball was affected by it. And it's very interesting because the major question now is that football decided to go a different direction than basketball did because of the whole bubble, right? Basketball chose the bubble, and it seemed to work very well for them. and football did not.
Baseball chose a playoff bubble, mm-hmm. which worked extremely well.
Now, do you think that they should have segregated the players better? Because we've been seeing nothing but players who have been afflicted with COVID even before the year started.
I think football is different because of how big the staffs are.
Mm-hmm.
Between the medical staff, the coaches, every team has so many coaches for every position. Even the line coaches have 3, 4, 5 coaches just for the offensive line.
Right.
And it's tough to have that much control over an entire organization.
I agree.
And football, I believe they have 53 men on their roster.
I think it's 53 man roster. Yeah,
and
I
think they did expand that too.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, with that expansion came more staff. And that's on top of the business of it, you know, like the marketing, yeah. all that goes into those sports organizations. Football has to be the biggest.
I would imagine so. It's got to be the most profitable. It's got to be the largest number of trainers and people that are on the field. I mean, when you see, you see a lot of people on the court when it's basketball, and you see a fair amount of people in the dugout when you watch baseball. But when you watch a football game and you see all those people on the field, mm-hmm. you got to imagine if there's transmission going on, it's going to be rampant, it's going to be quick. And I tend to agree with you that I don't think a bubble would work the same in football as it would in any sport.
And they are talking about it for the playoffs.
Correct.
And I did not look into it that much.
No.
But it seems like they might attempt it with the expansion of the playoffs and with those teams.
And with numbers raising, and we're starting to get into more cases. Luckily enough, the deaths and people who are being negatively afflicted with it are starting to go down, so we're hoping and praying that stays that way. But you're right. With the expanded playoffs and more teams getting into the playoffs now, we were discussing this earlier. We were mm-hmm. trying to figure out if we liked it or not. Neither of our teams are going to necessarily be affected by expanded playoffs necessarily.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that will make it interesting, just as a fan of football, is that second seed doesn't get a bye now.
Correct.
So towards the end of the season, you start seeing players get rested.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested, once we get to week 15, 16, if a team is vying for that second spot in the playoffs, if they lock up that second spot, if they're going to start resting.
I agree with
because
you.
Because now you're not invested into getting those top two seeds anymore because you're not playing for a bye. So if you're already in the playoffs, why risk the injury?
Yes, it's kind of like the difference between playing chess and playing checkers, right? I mean, we always talk about, we like to talk about this in our group, about how Bill Belichick likes to play more than just the X's and O's on the field. He actually plays behind the scenes and makes his choices as to how he's going to play his players. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if you're going for that second spot and you don't have to play for the bye, what exactly is that going to do to your overall roster? You know, are you going to be pulling, I can't even remember. Jameis Winston just got pulled essentially for Taysom Hill. Is Drew Brees going to be back? He's not. So are they going to go with Taysom Hill? Are they going to potentially use Jameis Winston? I don't know. The Saints have a big issue there,
I think. They're playing chess, not checkers.
Right. Well, and that Sean Payton is fantastic at that.
You got the Saints organization in itself needs to know what Taysom Hill is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he's been on the team for 4 years now. He's always been a team player.
He's always in the shadows, though.
Yeah, he is. But he can run. I've seen him do punt returns.
Right.
He's caught a couple touchdowns. He's played that running back, that wildcat position. And he's a different type of athlete that a team can benefit on all sides of the ball.
I agree. I'm very happy with the choice that they made. My wife, not so much because of fantasy football implications. My wife is a huge New Orleans Saints fan, and she loves Drew Brees. She loves his kids, and she chose Drew Brees in a fantasy football league. And when he went down
every year,
yep, he went down. Her team went down with it, and you know, she picked up Jameis Winston, and she's telling me like, what's going on? They're not going to use Winston anymore. And I said, believe me, the decisions that they make in the office have got to be tremendous. I can't imagine.
From what, not to stick on the Saints, but they said in previous weeks, if Drew Brees ever was to get hurt, Jameis would be the one, the number mm-hmm. two, to go in because he has such game experience.
Absolutely. It's
and if he's missing multiple games, then Taysom Hill would be the starter. So Jameis Winston sounds like a great team player as well. I have no pulse on the Saints whatsoever.
If he can get the ball to the correct receivers and not put them in the hands of the defense, right? I mean, he throws an insane number of interceptions.
It's but he ridiculous. Also led the league in touchdowns last year. It's so or funny. Yards, or yeah, he led crazy. The league in something,
like,
yeah.
He led the league in touchdowns and in interceptions. It was like almost right. matched. It was crazy. Right.
That, it is, and now he's not even a starting quarterback.
It's insane to think of, like, the turnover rate in football is so crazy with the names, and I have a hard time keeping up with all the names. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I know this Taysom Hill, and I'm like, oh my God, I completely forgot about him after they picked up Jameis Winston because I figured he'd be the backup de facto, and right. then he ended up being Ryan the bench. Mm-hmm. Go figure.
My initial thoughts on the cigar is outstanding.
This is an amazing smoke.
This is definitely a celebratory.
Like, yeah, it's smooth. It burns fantastically well. It has hints of cocoa. It's a full Nicaraguan wrapper. So I know that these are made with peak standards, and Padron has a fantastic reputation. So I was expecting nothing less. Same. But man, this is phenomenal.
It's very good.
Now, don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed the coffee flavored cigar that we had with our last podcast. If right. anybody has listened to our podcast last time, was about coffee and cigars, and this has hints and notes of coffee, which is kind of subtle and nice to get with a cigar smoke. But that last one we had was real sweet and real.
I smoked that again since.
100%. I haven't.
I have. And it you know, for that cigar, it's consistently good.
This cigar, though, like, it's just real mellow. And it's just, for a Maduro, this is a Maduro wrapper. And it just has a sweet little kick to it. And mm-hmm. I applaud the Patriots for picking this smoke out
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, Robert Kraft knows what he's doing with cigars.
He's a big cigar smoker. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. You see a couple of cigar smokers in the league. I posted on our Instagram a picture with four different images of cigars that have shown up in the league. The cigar we tried to get for this podcast was the cigar that Joe Burrow, the former championship quarterback for LSU, smoked after the win, the Carl Malone.
Yeah, and it looked outstanding. Oh, it does. Just it's difficult to get in an EPA, and by the time we decided on our topic and what the direction we were going to go, it was deemed impossible with shipping and COVID and to get it here in time. But future reference, I mean, I'm more of a baseball fan. Yes. I love baseball and all things baseball. I can probably name 20 of the 27 Yankee championship years. I am obsessed with the Yankees. So if we...
can't wait to do the baseball episode because I'm not either. As good. I know I was a big 90s fan, so I have my Braves is really where I was at, but I've fallen off with baseball as of lately, and I really haven't been watching it as much. I'll tell you what, like the World Series this year, I very rarely watched a second of it.
I was salty this year.
Just a bit?
No, not just a bit. Very bit. A lot of it. And but it's come spring training, I'm assuming we'll be doing a baseball one, so we'll definitely get that Carl Malone. And I'm excited about it.
Oh, I'm excited about it, too. But in that same vein, you know, you're a big Yankees fan, but I happen to know for a fact that you are a huge Notre Dame fan.
Die hard. It's 1A, 1B. Right. And my Saturday, David, I don't think, is going to be a Notre Dame fan. I think he's going to be forced into it. But I graduated from Penn State. Mm-hmm. Penn State games are incredible for the party. If you want to go for atmosphere, South Bend, Indiana is unlike anything you've ever been to. And two of our mutual friends, one of them I know has been there twice. And the other one is going to be getting a shamrock tattoo soon to match his Texas Longhorn one. But it's such a beautiful environment and everybody's so nice. But my Saturday, an hour before kickoff, I say, okay, Google, play Notre Dame music, and we're listening to Dropkick Murphys, fight songs. It's an event.
Well, and that was something I was going to ask you, because in my household, it's not. Like, I know a lot of people, when they do football on Saturdays and Sundays, it's like a whole day affair. And I wasn't brought up that way. I really didn't have that kind of bringing up. Yeah. How is it for you?
It wasn't like that at all. Saturdays... The most important, the only time it was most important was my family never missed the first kickoff.
Interesting.
Ever of the season. As I got older, I through college I didn't do it. I, you know, it was what it was, but now it's a huge event.
Right.
Sundays I would always we'd always have noon dinner. An Italian. We always did the Italian meal, noon dinner. And then we would just segue into those 1 o'clock games. And back in the day, we didn't have the NFL ticket.
No.
We had the local channels.
Yeah.
So you watch the 1 o'clock
on the antenna.
Yeah. But you watch the best 1 o'clock game, whether it be on CBS or Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And then same at the four. You watch what you had. And I remember I couldn't have been 9, 10 years old. The Niners were walloping a team. And
it's probably the Bengals, most likely.
Very much likely. But I forget what team. They were killing them. It was like 49-0. And they switched to a different game midway through a third quarter.
Oh, I hate when they do that.
But back in the day, it was cataclysmic to me because that was the only Niner game I got to see all year. Mm-hmm. Had to have been the Eagles, actually, yeah. Because they were on Fox. You know, I remember I got out a pen and paper and started writing to Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so mad that they changed it. And no knock on Eagles. I mean, yeah, they won their championship. But back in the day, like the 90s, they were not a good team.
No, and it's interesting because we have a lot to talk about with this topic. And I was kind of like going that way is because it's funny. Me and Dustin were talking about this in terms of our teams that we pick. So in terms of baseball, I'm a Braves and you're Yankees, mm-hmm. right? Which they kind of butt heads a little bit if you think about the number of championships.
Niners, nobody come. No team comes close in any sport to the Yankees.
But you remember the Braves in the 90s.
They 17 division championships in a row, I believe.
So, I mean, that was my team growing up. And
they just couldn't win. They couldn't beat the Yankees.
They just couldn't beat the Yankees.
They won two games, and then
I'm not that salty. I'll let that go. But when it comes to football, I'm a Bengals fan and you're a Niners fan. And for anybody that knows, you know, the Bengals have made it to the Super Bowl, I believe, all of two times and have lost both times under Joe Montana and the Niners, if I'm not mistaken.
So is that really a rivalry? Because the Niners, I think you have to win something to.
I consider it a bit of a rivalry. I mean, clearly it's not as big of a rivalry as it is against the Steelers and the Bengals.
What is very funny about that, though, is if the Niners are on Sunday Night Football, Chris Collinsworth looks for any chance to badger.
Here's a guy.
Although he's wearing the red and gold, he plays the position decent.
Like, it's so funny how times have changed with mm-hmm. football and how, like, us growing up, I was not a Bengals fan growing up.
It's very bizarre, but I think it was like 29 or 30. Actually, no. Me and myself and Eric and Josh mm-hmm. went to a Steelers game. And that was my first NFL game. And the fan base of the Steelers was awesome.
Yeah.
The city was awesome. They're my number two team. And now what's crazy is I see myself, because Chase Claypool, the Notre Dame receiver, he was one of my favorite Notre Dame players, and now he's on the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger is a great comeback story this year. And, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, you see him doing all that good stuff for the city. And
he's a fantastic kid.
He's a good human.
He's a good human.
And all the Steelers players, though, that organization top to bottom is a fantastic organization for what that family.
I don't like Mike Tomlin. Personally, but I'm a Bengals fan.
You're a Bengals fan. You're not supposed to. You know, it's
yeah, there's a couple of instances of him being on the field when he's not supposed to be there.
He's passionate.
Yeah, I guess that's what
the the organization itself, though, is something I'm a fan of.
Yes.
I find myself, like my Twitter feed, you know how it customizes after you search something mm-hmm. forever? Mine currently is DJ LeMahieu everything.
Oh, okay.
And then it's funny because it's all Steelers.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, like I find myself watching the Steelers, keeping up on the Steelers more than the Niners.
They're undefeated this year. I mean, it's hard to miss.
Yeah, but even last year when the Niners were playing, they went to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I went crazy rooting for them. But it was one of those things where, you know, I find myself equally passionate now for the Steelers as I do for the Niners. And it's funny because my wife was a huge Steelers fan, and watching Pat Mahomes so intently because he was my fantasy quarterback.
Oh, yeah. That's another story we'll have to talk about. Oh, yeah.
But she has become, like, she has the Chiefs keychain now. She wants a Mahomes jersey. Like, she has become a Chiefs fan.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And she loves Andy Reid. Like, she'll always send me, like, a funny picture of him. And he's a great human, too. And his story.
Remember him and the Eagles? I remember watching that Super Bowl at the comic book shop. Dustin and I, you have a friend that we used to go and watch. We watched the game there.
I remember that too.
And I just remember it was Donovan McNabb. It was the quarterback.
Yeah. And Terrell Owens was yelling at him in the huddle.
Oh, T.O. Hey, I like Ocho Cinco and T.O. They teamed up and they had a good go at it. But when I was growing up, I liked the Cowboys. I was an Emmitt Smith fan. I mean, I had a big puffy Cowboys jacket, and I remember loving watching the Cowboys. But my family never really watched sports. It wasn't a big part of my life.
My dad was a huge Cowboys fan, and my Uncle Bill, who was like a second father to me, was a huge Cowboys fan. And I think what got me to the Niners was my love for Notre Dame and then watching Joe Montana.
Of course.
Growing up in those early 90s, he was fire. You know, and then the Niners got Steve Young. I'm a lefty. He's a lefty. And he left it all on the field.
Yep.
I mean, he was Mike Vick before Mike Vick. Like, there's some highlights of him just.
Oh, it's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I would say my Bengals choice really came from my family. I have family who live out in Ohio. They're mostly Browns fan, which is interesting. But I have an Uncle Mike who I'm named after. He's a huge Bengals fan, and you don't see a whole lot of them up here in Northeast Pennsylvania. We're big Steelers and Eagles fans up here. And, you know, that gets to be interesting to say the least. I mean, the fan base in the Eagles has got to be the worst fan base in football. Mm-hmm. My friends who are Eagles fans are. They probably are very devoted and very happy, but you see them and you hear stories about their fan base, and it's scary.
Oh, the Eagles are terrible.
They absolutely.
Yeah, and David, he knows to not be an Eagles fan. And we think he's like a closet Eagles fan because they won the Super Bowl the year he was starting to acknowledge that football was a sport.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was like 5 or 6. So they're pivotal years. And, you know, thinking about your history and my history, 5 and 6, right. I mean, that's huge. That's when
we had our initial teams. Yeah. Absolutely. And you're right. My son has started to watch more football. I'm not big on the pageantry. And, you know, I put the game on every once in a while for when I got a couple bucks on the game or for fantasy purposes. But he'll be watching the game. He gets really involved and interested in what's going on and, you know, how is this working? He hasn't picked a team just yet. My wife's trying to push the Saints on him a little bit. I try to push him towards the Bengals, but I don't know. I mean, it seems like when you're a kid, you sometimes go towards the colors and sometimes towards the names.
I think as we get older and our kids and grandkids start to watch football, it's not going to be as much of the local teams. Like, you know, like
because of the red zone. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we were – all we had was – local channels.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing you watch. So if you watch something over and over and over again, eventually you're going to be brainwashed into liking them.
Right. Yeah.
And
that's
true. You know, you don't have that anymore. And that's going to add a different flair, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It's very interesting to see how teams' fan bases move and they change over time. And you just think about how Green Bay and their loyal fans, I mean, every fan's an owner of the team, right?
Yeah.
That's such a weird situation that Green Bay has, but they are diehard loyal fans. I would say that probably loyalty-wise, they may be the most loyal next to the Cowboys.
And they're a good fan base.
They really are.
They're not, you know, they're not going to cause fights. They're not.
No.
Like, if I wore a Niners jersey into Green Bay, I'll get ribbed a little bit, but, you know, they're not going to pour beer on my kid like Philadelphia might. Or, you know, and.
Oh, you don't want to get stuck by the Bills Mafia, right?
Right. Exactly.
You put through a table.
Yeah, right. A bunch of Dudleyville, right?
Oh, geez. I can't imagine going. I wish I could get a chance to go to a Bills game and just see it in the parking lot. Just to observe it because it's going to be hilarious.
I would absolutely love that. One tradition, though, that's starting to peak, and Beth is 50-50 on it. I think she likes it. I think some weeks she likes it a little bit more than others, depending on if there's an SVU marathon or not.
Right.
But once 1 o'clock hits, I mean, our week is over.
Mm-hmm.
My last Sunday, my step counter, I got 1,300 steps in.
Wow. It's fantastic.
Yeah, right? The 1 o'clock hits, we both sit on the couch, and we just watch football till 11 o'clock.
And that it's such a major part of people's lives. I mean, they do more than watch the game. They put it all over their house. They put it in their cars. The man cave has football memorabilia left and right. I'm not really big into the fan sort of side of it, because what happened was I'm a Penn State fan. You know, college football is it's a small place in my heart. But when the scandal came out with Penn State, and you saw all these people who were so far gone when it came to talking about Joe Paterno. And don't get me wrong, I think Joe Paterno was a phenomenal human being.
There's fandom and then fanatical.
Really, it is. And a lot with Facebook, you see people who are just like crazy with some of this
stuff. And social media definitely fired it. Like, fired it up. Like, they're adding fuel right to it.
And it's not even in college football. I mean, you see it with the headhunter or the bounty scandal that was in the Saints organization. You see this coming out all throughout the NFL, where there are, you know, scandalous situations, especially with domestic abuse and sexual violence and things like that. And people are just so dedicated to their team. You have to take these things into consideration and talk about them. You know, these are human beings. Things happen to them.
And what's different from today to when Dan Marino and John Elway played, now you get to see them on a human level.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you look at someone like Antonio Brown.
Oh, boy, what a story that is.
Right? But, like, his Twitter was insane. And he has all the talent in the world. Mm-hmm. And you can just see, since that perfect hit, like, just his mental capacity fluctuating on social media. Now, you think about Jerry Rice. Mm-hmm. And he is my wide receiver through and through. But if, you know, they didn't have to worry about that social media side of things. Mike Tomlin was given a press a post game speech. What was that now? 3 years ago, and he put it on social media. Like, they didn't have to worry about that, and that's going to add a lot to it. Like, now that we have technology everywhere,
I agree. 100%. And it goes into the question about our players being human, and, you know, they're constantly under the microscope, is what is their say in matters that are non-football? I mean, the huge conversation that has been coming up is, you know, what does Colin Kaepernick's opinions on kneeling during the national anthem do for the American public? You know, it's a tough, tricky situation, because it is mildly it's not even mildly disrespectful. It is disrespectful, but in the same breath, it has a purpose. It has a meaning.
I was close to that situation being a Niners fan, and the first week he didn't, a lot of people forget this now, he sat on the bench.
Yep.
And
I remember the photos, I remember that.
And I believe it, a member of the military, a retired member of the military, whether it be a Marine or National Guard or somebody who, you know, was served our country, went to him and said, I understand what you're doing. I respect what you're doing. It's a free country. You can do what you want. Don't sit. Kneel.
Right.
Don't sit, because that is a slap in the face for everything we work for. At minimum, kneel.
Right. And that's more respectful. Absolutely.
And the way that he presented it to Kaepernick, and the way that it was a adult conversation from, obviously I wasn't there, but you know, it seemed like it was good feedback both sides. And that's when it started kneeling. And that's a touchy situation and touchy topic. And, you know, everybody reserves their opinions.
What do you think? Do you think that football players should just be football players, or do you think they should have opinions?
Well, they should definitely have opinions, but it's a matter of when and where they express it. Basketball was never my favorite sport. I would always watch the playoffs. And when they went into the bubble and all the Black Lives Matter, and, you know, that's a very sad time in our country, and the means of which they were expressing their opinion, I get it, and I respect it, and I appreciate it, but it kind of gave me a sour taste, because if I'm watching basketball, that's kind of my entertainment, my disconnect from my crazy life.
That's exactly what a lot of people have told me in that same opinion.
And again, like, it's no shot at them. Like, I totally love and respect their expressions, and they're totally allowed to do it. It's just, you know, I feel as if there was something else that could have been done. They could have done other things rather than on that national perspective. You know, the eyes are watching basketball, and that could be their escape from the reality of their racism that they're going through.
Right. Absolutely. And that's interesting, because I think that's the reason why they do it on a national scale, is because these are kids, these are, you know, whether it's college or professional, that generally speaking, don't have a platform like a politician or like a...
But they do.
they do now because they're in the spotlight. I mean, and you know who these people, you know who Kobe Bryant is. I mean, you know who Colin Kaepernick is because you see them every Sunday.
And LeBron.
And you see these people who are so adamant about these issues, and they really do a good job of expressing their thoughts in a clear, concise manner. But does it go too far? And I think sometimes
I feel
it does.
Like the Players Tribune is a great outlet for the players. What the Players Tribune is, I believe Derek Jeter started it. Mm-hmm. The players can write in, and they're kind of like the bloggers, and they're not leaving it to the national reporters. Mm-hmm. They're the one doing it. That is a beautiful platform to express that, and the feedback is always good. You know,
yes,
like
absolutely.
Because they're all human, and that shows that human element, and that's a great platform for them to express that.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And, you know, getting back to football, I think Jerry Jones said under no circumstance does he want a player kneeling.
Right.
I feel like that is a little...
Yeah, the ultimatum is not a good way to represent it at all. I mean, you're going to disenfranchise yourself, and right now the Cowboys are in a tricky spot because they lost Dak Prescott, and then Andy Dalton, the former Bengal, I love Andy Dalton. He took that hard hit, and not a single player went to his side. And that culture in football is scary to think of, that there's not a player on your team that wants to go in and basically back you up. And it may be a disenfranchisement within the higher ups in the organization, the owner, the managers, I don't know. But football is family. Football is culture. And I think what we'll do after our break is we'll talk a little bit about that, because you played high school football, and you know a little bit about the camaraderie that goes along with playing football. I unfortunately do not, and we'll talk about that as well. But we're about 30 minutes in.
I'd say we're about a third through the cigar.
We're about a third through. It's interesting because we expected this cigar to last us 2 hours, is what we were guessing. And I don't know if this is going to last me 2 hours. I don't know. I smoke a little faster than you, but
yeah. We're about the same, though.
Yeah. What do you think of the smoke?
I love it.
Oh, this is phenomenal.
I find myself about 15 to 20 per puff, mm-hmm. seconds. And I think a lot of it's just because I'm enjoying it.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
You know, like, I don't want to talk too much because I want to smoke the cigar.
Right.
You
know? Well, hopefully we won't talk too much for our listeners, and then we won't be jabbing and jawing too much. But when we come back, I think what we'll do is we'll discuss a little bit about, you know, how our background in terms of playing football. And we also want to make sure we talk about fantasy football and betting, because that has such a major impact on sports, that football has become such a huge betting sport. It's crazy.
BRB.
Yeah, we'll be right back, everybody. All right, guys, welcome back. We're here with Ash Hats Podcast, and me, Mike, and Dustin. We've decided to discuss football as a major part of our lives, and we're smoking the Padron 1964 anniversary. I'm almost at the halfway mark. I smoke a little bit faster than Dustin does, and we were just talking during the break about how it's so smooth. Like, sometimes when you're smoking a cigar, the acid flavor, the acridity of it is just so powerful that it knocks your socks off, and This is a Maduro. It's a very dark, well, it's not very dark, but it's a dark smoke, mm-hmm. and it has none of that whatsoever.
So I always think to myself, if our two friends who like the flavored cigars, like, if it would bother them, like, they're actually my gauge,
mm-hmm.
and I think they'd be fine with this.
I agree.
This is a good cigar, I think, for anybody.
I agree. It's a little pricey. We were talking about a $20 cigar is tough to come by. Now, granted, it's worth it 100% because I get to smoke it with you.
I would definitely do this one again, though. I would split a box with you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. A box would be astronomical.
I would say, well, box of 20, probably around two.
About $345 I priced it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is a premium.
That would be our most expensive
this
purchase.
This would definitely be our most expensive box next to, we still got to get that Cuban box coming from iHavanas, you know, where there's a couple sites that I look at and try to get our Cubans in. But yeah, I think that would be our most expensive smoke. We wanted to, in our last segment, we talked a lot about football and football players and their opinions and whether or not, you know, they need to have space to discuss, you know, their ideas. And we talked a little bit about how big sport it is for family and how it brings people together. I was mentioning about the camaraderie and how playing football just is a family. I didn't have the opportunity. I really wish I had. I went to a Catholic high school that was big in basketball. We had, if anybody knows Northeast Pennsylvania, you probably know the name Jerry McNamara. I went to school with him. He's the assistant coach at Syracuse right now. Fantastic
guy. Doing a great job. Yeah.
Doing a fantastic job. And he really was a good guy, but that was our sport. The joke was always that we were undefeated in football.
Shirt that said Bishop Hannon undefeated. Everybody had.
Man. Right. And in the opposite sort of vein, you went to a school that has a prestigious football career. You know, West Granton High School, where I taught at for several years, has some of the bigger names in this area that have come up and actually played football, most recently being Matt McGloin, was a mm-hmm. former quarterback at West Granton that played for the...
Penn State.
Well, he played for Penn State first, but I was thinking professionally. He played for the Raiders. He was on the
Eagles
for a brief period of time.
And the Chiefs.
And the Chiefs for a very brief period of time.
And then the XFL.
And then to the XFL, that's right. With the Guardians, I believe.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. I hope that it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right? He just bought the XFL.
2021, it's coming back.
I cannot wait.
That
I loved the XFL.
That was such a good league.
Fantastic idea to bring that back. Vince McMahon and everything that he was doing with the XFL, I remember that. What year was that? Like in 2001 when that came out? And
2000, 2001.
It was like so scandalous and so ridiculous. And it was
raunchy.
Raunchy, yeah. And now it's like, it's literally like the B League of football. And I just saw there was a player that just got picked up.
Oh, PJ Walker,
yeah,
I think was his name.
Somebody just got picked up from the XFL into the professionals.
Well, yeah. PJ Walker this past week started for the Panthers and won.
That's correct.
And he didn't play bad. I watched a lot of that game and he looked the part.
I think that's a great idea because there's so many people that have football knowledge and football sense and they could use it. And the XFL is just another stepping ground into the NFL.
And one thing that was cool too, and I was saying it actually today in passing, remember that other league, that AAF?
I really liked the AAF too. I was an Arizona Hotshots fan.
Yeah, but the rules and that eye in the sky.
Oh, yeah, and they had the chip and the ball or something like that in the app.
But like the eye in the sky can overturn a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what the NFL needs so bad.
And it's such a good idea to try some of these ideas off in that league because I feel like when it comes down to instant replay and penalties and things that go on in the NFL – it is such a contested situation.
Nobody can define pass interference.
Oh, it's so terrible.
An opinion.
We were just talking about this in our group of friends about how I think it was DeAndre Hopkins wanted the yards to count. If you had a pass interference called that was against you, that they wanted to count the yards as positive for your player, which in my mind is such a terrible idea because that's so selfish. He just those yards for himself.
Yeah, but also think about the college and you could throw a deep ball. And in my opinion, the Packers did this against the Colts this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Time was running out in the first half and Aaron Rodgers just slung a ball and it was a 51-yard penalty with 3 seconds left.
Changes the game.
And if you watch the replay, the wide receiver, I think it was MVS, he hooked his arm with the defender and then sold it.
Yep.
And it happened so fast.
And the officials, the refs are only human. You know, they see what they
and
see.
They take the side of the offense more often than not, especially in the NFL.
I can't imagine being an NFL official. Interesting fact, I think I saw this on Twitter either today or yesterday that for the first time they had an all African American team
led by Jerome Boger.
Yep, yeah. That's right.
That was last night.
I was just going to say it was in the Tampa Bay game.
And I'll tell you what, it was a great officiate. They did a very good job.
Oh, absolutely.
I had some fantasy with that.
And that's an interesting point that we should bring up. I don't want to go too far away from our conversation, but let me ask you this first. What do you think about playing football in high school?
For me, it was very different.
Mm-hmm.
I loved playing the rec football with my friends. I always had excellent hands, not to brag, but I think I was Mike Tilbury's favorite wide receiver. but I'm 5'6". At the time, I was between 170 and 180. And, I mean, most of these football players, like when we played Delaware Valley, their smallest lineman was 6'3", 4,000.
Right.
You know, like, I'm going up against these Mastodon, and you line up the first time, and you're like, please don't body slam or kill me. You know, and... But for me, it was different because I never started. And,
right.
You know, my family, my dad was an excellent running back. My uncle played football at Dunmore. And my cousin Chris was an all-world player.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to play because I knew it meant a lot to my family. And it still does. And when I started playing, what I enjoyed was the weightlifting. And I know... A lot of us always talk about that, but that was my favorite part. Because, I mean, I played JV, and I played a bunch of different positions. But at my body size, there wasn't much I could do. But I felt like, you know, in retrospect, like that really bothered me not starting. And I put in the effort. And,
right.
You know, one player came from another school that was a coach's son that started over me.
Yep.
So then the nepotism. Yeah, sure. It is what it is. And right. that said player is a great kid.
Right.
And, you know, like, if I saw him now, like, we'd have a nice conversation. I got no animosity, but I feel like that built a lot of my character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I felt like understanding that to be a team player, you know.
Right.
And I don't want to say I was a practice all-star. Like, I didn't go above and beyond. I enjoyed it. I never quit. And a lot of that was due to the family feeling. Like, I loved my team. I loved the coaches. No animosity towards them. I feel like that built me to who I am today and understanding what my part of the team was.
And it goes without saying that team sports do build character. They build integrity. They build so many positive qualities. But my next question for you is, we both have two young sons. Would you let your son play football? Because I don't know if I would. I get so worried about injuries.
After playing in high school, you know, I obviously wasn't going to any schools to play football. And I ended up playing soccer because I ended up loving the team side of it. I would love for David and Benny to play football.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we also did, which is I played up until this past, about 2 years ago, I stopped playing, was flag football.
Right.
Flag football, and I loved flag football. I was able, the size didn't matter. You know, I could be 5'6 playing against a 7-footer, but I'm still grabbing his flag.
Exactly.
You know, and I can still run those slot routes, and I can still be a possession receiver. I could do whatever I wanted. I do have a couple passing touchdowns, but it was very similar. Like, I love playing flag football. I played it, I would say at least 13, 14 years.
I was going to say over a decade, because as long as I've known you, we have a lot of friends. Our friend Josh, we met, he's one of our best friends through flag football. And I never really played with you guys flag football. I played a couple of our Turkey Day games or Thanksgiving Day games, and I enjoyed flag football. And that was, I'm not very athletic for anybody that knows me. I'm probably, you know, the one with two left feet. But at the same time, I really...
You have a good 40-yard dash, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, that goes without saying. But I don't know. I never had it growing up. So, I mean, I always enjoyed the fun of being with my friends and playing. But I also, at the same time, didn't get that advantage of enjoying it in high school. And I think that was something that I missed out on. So,
yeah, and
it's interesting to hear from you.
It's not for everybody. I think there's a lot of alternative team sports. A lot of my college friends that I still talk to today, we played soccer together. So if you look at football as the variable, the team sport and all those traits that I gained from football, I gained similar through soccer. And, you know, playing both sports, I could definitely see a similarity. 11 on 11, the team sport,
right.
The physicality was, soccer is not an easy sport.
Oh no, the cardio, and I can't imagine.
I didn't do a lot of the cardio. I was kind of the goon. Go in there, make sure the ball doesn't go by you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Football is such a universal sport, more than we think. Like flag football, the two-hand touch, rec football.
Yep.
It brings you together, and it's definitely a mindset thing. Like, even when playing flag, like, you have to be in the zone.
Absolutely.
And if you're not in the zone, if you're not paying attention, then you're going to lose.
Right.
If you, every play, you have to do the right thing or you let your team down.
Right. And you have to have that win mentality. I mean, you, some people play just because of the, you know, the health benefits of it. But I dislike, that's one thing I dislike about sometimes playing sports is when you get those people who are like, ah, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm just doing this to do it. And it's, you know, when you have a winning attitude, whether it be flag football or in life, it shows and it builds confidence. It builds character. I think I will, you know, I will push Luke and Samuel into sports, but at the same time, I don't want them to be necessarily thinking like, oh, I got to be a D1 player and have to show my parents that I can do these things. It's, you know, whatever
and
is best for them.
You and I have talked about this extensively. David loves bowling.
Yes,
and he loves the team side of the bowling.
Right.
And he plays soccer. Mm-hmm. He loves that team. And he's the goalie because he feels like that burden to stop the ball is most, like, he enjoys that burden. He always likes to bowl last because he likes to, and he's 9. Like, so he's starting to get it. Benny's 7 months old, so
right,
the,
yeah,
who knows?
You're going to get this all over again.
Yeah.
Another 5 or 6 years.
But David did flag football. Mm-hmm. I would recommend flag football for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as physical as...
No.
You're not even
right.
Close. You still get that team chemistry. But David was the cheerleader.
Yeah.
He was playing safety. And for a 9-year-old, that's, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But
zone defense or man to man?
It was zone.
Yeah.
So the guy caught it. A kid caught it. And instead of David going after him, he stopped in the middle of the gym and was flossing.
Nice.
He's like, go score a touchdown as he's flossing. And I'm like, okay. Football is not his sport. He loves watching baseball with me.
There you go.
He loves the Yankees. And, you know, that's okay, too. Just to understand, I think a lot of the youth sports is learning that team chemistry.
I agree with you 100%. And it's interesting because I'm also an educator, and we get into these conversations about the value of sports and education. And, you know, that's a lot of the opportunity that people have when they go to play sports is through their school. And it's getting to be a very weird situation because of the funding and how much education gets done for these kids as to, you know, are they more dedicated to football? Or are they more dedicated to their learning? And we're starting to see that there's so many scandals that came out. I think there was a Notre Dame scandal, if I'm not mistaken, where kids were caught not doing the work that they were supposed to be doing. And you hear the stories, the Friday Night Light, mm-hmm. you know, movie situations where kids basically they get free passes and they do whatever they want to do. I think a little bit of that has changed. I mean, you see players like he went to Stanford. I can't remember his name. He retired. The former
Andrew Luck?
Andrew Luck, who had a phenomenal career as a football player, but also was very dedicated to his education. So I want Luke
And he to, came from a football family.
He did come from a football family. And he, the fact that he retired because of the injuries, I mean, I can't imagine being in his shoes knowing that his team was you know, looking forward to him playing and just...
Yeah, because he retired... Right before the first preseason.
Right before the first game.
Like after the draft. And,
wow, it was ridiculous.
And I would never be able to do it. And I'm happy I was never in that situation where I would have to retire, you know, to let them down. But I think the number one thing for me that I took from football was that I have the inability to let somebody down.
Right.
Like I just can't. If I give somebody my word, pretty good on it.
Yeah, and you give them your 100%. You know, you tell them that you're gonna do something and you're gonna back them up and you're gonna be there.
You learn accountability at
exactly.
the end of the day. You know, like
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important lesson to be learned, whatever sport it might be. Football.
Absolutely.
Football, I think, happens to be, you know, one of the things that we like.
I think football accountability is crucial
mm-hmm.
because if you miss a block, that quarterback's dead.
Yep.
And
what just happened to Joe Burrow.
Oh,
that was awful.
What are your thoughts on injuries in football?
It's very interesting because I've talked to a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, and one of the conversations is if the strength and conditioning was better, there would be less ACL tears and less of these sort of situations. And part of the preseason, I think, was supposed to be to kind of warm your body up and ready for the season. And that's why there's such a big situation with the contact versus non-contact in the practices. And I don't know. I'm wondering if it's... they're rushing these players so much to get in there and just be so physical that that's what's causing the situation. Clearly, there was a blocking issue there
I think this year more than ever, yes.
Yeah, there's but no braces in this year.
I also feel like the players are getting bigger. They're getting faster. They're getting stronger.
I was just
they're
thinking
that. They're training harder. So if you're training and overtraining without even knowing it, I mean, if you think like 20, 30, 40 years ago, ACL tears were an anomaly.
Oh, very much.
Now it's at least to a game, it feels, you know, like, and it's, I feel like a lot of it has to do with that training, but could also be something as simple as adding yoga.
Yeah.
You know, like adding that flexibility and
100% agree.
It's weird because again, you never saw ACL tears back in the day. And now it's almost like a rite of passage.
It happens all the time. It happens. And it's
passive. Like the turnaround. Odell Beckham tore his ACL. Okay.
Yeah, it happens like it's nothing anymore. And their turnaround time is crazy. I remember
from what I understand, it's supposed to be one of the most painful injuries.
Yeah.
It's like second or third to a gunshot wound.
Crazy. Like, I can't imagine the pain. And that's got to destroy your knees for the future. I know. I remember when Saquon Barkley had that injury. I think it was last year or the year before. And they were saying, like, oh, he's done for the year. And he worked his ass off trying to get back, and he got back, and he put up some more yards throughout the year. But I just, for a regular human being, I can't imagine what the recovery time is.
I feel like the Achilles tendon tears this year were so high,
yeah,
because of the lack of preparation in that preseason. And you know, it's not just those four games; like they couldn't have their spring ball, they couldn't. Yep. Have their normal routine of workouts. So now you're trying to go full speed, but you know, like that'd be like me trying to lay down bench 315.
Right.
You know, like you can't, you have to train up to doing that.
Major shout out to the strength and conditioning coaches out there, because clearly there needs to be some kind of conversation, more so than just your regular weightlifting. You, like you said, the yoga, whatever kind of flexibility training is required, because there's definitely a problem there. One other conversation that we were talking about in terms of all this, and I want to make sure that we talk about, is fantasy football, because clearly fantasy football has blown up. We were having that conversation with our friends that it's been around for like 30 years, which I think is
so
nuts.
I own a junk removal business, and I would say 2 years ago, we pulled out a box of notebooks, and the box of notebooks was all the fantasy stats. And it hit me like a chair shot, dude, like thinking that fantasy football was around before computers. I can never imagine doing fantasy football by hand.
Like getting the newspaper and looking up stats every week. That has got to be insane. Now, granted, we're millennials and we're used to having the Google at our fingertips.
Yeah, we can do our whole draft from our phone.
Exactly. Well, ESPN and Yahoo does it for us automatically. And when you lose by 0.4 points because a receiver drops the ball, me and Dustin just had our matchup. Our head-to-head not this last week, but the week before, I lost by 0.4 points.
You sure did.
And it was ridiculous, and it makes me think, like, man.
And I was talking with Nick, mm-hmm. and it's just like, this past week I was in another close game, and I had to stop and meditate and say, listen, it's fantasy football. You know, you're playing for a name on a belt, and it's...
When your name goes on that belt twice, man. Which my name has gone on that belt twice, by the way, a two-time former fantasy football
and
champion.
And living in the now, what place are you in our league?
Oh, it's got to be 10th.
You're 9th.
All right. Well, that sounds about right.
And I, just playing with the law number 4, I'm in 4th.
And it's very interesting, you know, to get away from you tooting your own horn over there. That fantasy football is so luck-driven. But there is a lot of skill involved in it.
Do you find yourself learning more about the sport through fantasy football?
100%. And it's funny because our friends like to bust my chops and they like to say, you know, Mike doesn't understand nearly much about football.
But you're an analytical guy.
I am. And that's, I like to look at stats. And love it.
My cousin Jeffrey, he was, they said no to him joining our league because everybody thought he knew nothing about football. And what he does is he removes the name from the player. Like Tom Brady, everybody, everybody thinks he's
big name.
He'll do the daily fantasy leagues with you guys, and he wins a lot.
He does.
And he does that because he looks at matchups. He looks at this. He looks at weather.
That's exactly what I do. I mean, if you're looking at weather, that means that you're looking at the statistics. And I find myself winning a good share of games from the simple fact that you look at whose defense is going against this player,
how injury reports,
the cornerback that's going to be against that wide receiver, what the conditions are going to be like for that quarterback. Are they going to run the ball more? Are they running back by committee? I mean, there's just so many different options. And then it leads us into the conversation about sports betting, because you know you better believe that there's money on these games.
Well, we just mentioned about the daily leagues, and it's not just football. I mean, we have a friend that bets on German basketball from time to time, you know, my brother-in-law bet on Formula One,
right?
Like what?
You know, and sports betting it's been around forever. I mean, I know my uncle is the one who got me into sports betting, and I used to do the football cards where the parlays, and you pick 12 teams and you hope to get 11 of them and win a big chunk of change. But, I mean, it was just something that was always around in my childhood. It was a big deal.
What was your first exposure to it?
As a child, I remember my father and my uncle used to talk about, basically.
Did they do the cards?
They did the cards. They did the points. I mean, you looked at the spreads. I mean, I learned everything about sports betting through them.
My first one was my Uncle Frank.
Yep.
And we were down in Philadelphia for the Kentucky Derby. And his group of friends.
My grandpa used to play the ponies.
Oh, and he, the whole day, I had to have been 12, 13, and everybody was chanting the trifecta box. Yeah. I'm like, what in God's name? And he hit it.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
It was for my cousin's graduation, and that area went crazy. Like, everybody on my uncle's compound went insane. I mean, I to this day, I have no idea how much Uncle Frank won, but I know that he got a keg delivered. I know that we partied well. I was 12, so I didn't enjoy any of this, but,
right.
It was insane. And then they were betting that night on a boxing fight.
Yep.
And it was just such a and again, I didn't bet, I didn't drink, I didn't enjoy any of this winning festivity, but I enjoyed seeing them happy. And I enjoyed just being in that environment.
It changes it's one thing when your team wins, but it's another thing when you win money on a game. Like, it's just the thrill and the excitement.
I never thought about it until this moment. I never thought about what would happen if it went the other way.
Right. Oh, I know.
If you win a lot, you have to bet a lot sometimes.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You want to win 10 grand? You got to put, I have a friend I know who put money on the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. And won $60,000.
It's like, crazy.
Now, granted, I'm pretty sure he put $20,000 down on that. Right. And it was a long futures bet that he had. And it was like insane to think of to put that much money down. Luckily enough, I'm not that big of a gambler. But my family has a bit of a competitive streak. And my dad likes to play the lottery tickets and the scratch-offs. Mm-hmm. And I think he does it because he wants the thrill of potentially winning.
That's a thrill in itself.
Oh, it is. But we do it with a daily fantasy every single week. At least we try to.
And then they're, again, back to that losing a lot. You have a coworker who was my teacher who bet a lot on a shoe-in. I think it was Patriots-Jets.
Patriots-Jets, 100%.
And it came down to a last play, and they did some kind of weird trick play.
Yep.
And he lost 5 digits of money.
Absolutely. I mean, it was an astronomical loss. But when you're betting, you have to take that chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it ebbs and flows. And that's why I don't get that much into sports betting. I really enjoy the excitement of like seeing if my team's going to beat the spread and, you know, talking to people about, do you really think that they're actually going to put up that extra 3 points? You know, it's kind of fun to think of, but Vegas, man, they have their pulse on the button when it comes to these sort of things.
And then things like Nick Chubb.
Yeah, with that.
Running out of bounds.
How ridiculous was
and
that?
And that cost somebody that.
Yeah, it cost a lot of people money.
Money or their fantasy game a ton. And here we are, couch potatoes, and we're, you know what I mean, like average shows. Oh, you piece of shit. And, you know, somebody sent that in our group text. It was like a meme, and it was the huge man eating a cheeseburger while Nelson Aguilar had a drop ball. Fucking.
What else is new? Nelson Aguilar couldn't catch a cold.
He's playing well this year.
Surprisingly, I know. And that's, it, again,
it's, he had a big drop Sunday night. Yeah, but, he did. But he had a lot of big catches, too.
Yeah, he did. And that's going to happen. I mean, it's funny because you have a team, and I'm a big AJ Green fan, and I love AJ Green. I love his story. I love what he's been doing. He's really gone to the wayside. And it's the only jersey I ever bought was my Bengals AJ Green jersey.
For
it's
real?
The only football jersey I ever bought. And
are you going to get a Burrow one?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know how his recovery is going to be. I'm interested to see. He was set to break tons of rookie records, every rookie record. I mean, he is a phenomenal player to watch. And as a Bengal, I was real excited for him. I'm starting to get sad about the whole situation. I'm starting to look towards Trevor Lawrence now becoming a Jet and seeing how that situation is going to pan out.
But it's crazy because 3 years ago they took Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about on our break about the camaraderie of football. And some of my best moments with football and friends are our personal draft party, which always brings us together. That's a big day in our year, in our calendars. And we know exactly what it's going to be that Sunday before Labor Day.
Yep.
And we used to get together for the NFL draft.
Yes, we did.
And we have Kyle, who will defenestrate anybody right out a window. I mean, if the Giants pick somebody bad.
Remember when Manti Te'o, were you there for that?
Oh, I absolutely was. That was at Tilbury's apartment.
Yep. Manti Te'o was coming up for a pick, and he was so adamant
pacing
that if the Giants picked Manti Te'o, that TV was going out a second floor window.
Defenestrate.
And it was like insane to and that goes into our conversation earlier about how passionate people are about the sport and about what their team is. And now, granted, the Giants have a great story as well. I mean, they have at least two Super Bowl wins, if not more. I'm sure there's more. But
Kyle could attest to this. I was hospitalized the night the Niners drafted Vernon Davis.
Oh, really?
I dehydrated because I was going that crazy. Like, we walked to a hoagie shop because I couldn't calm down. We got roast beef hoagies, and then two hours later, I was in the hospital because I was dehydrated, and I was just that excited and that worked up that, I mean, and Beth has an uncle who was hospitalized when the Yankees were in the World Series in 2009 because he got that passionate, and they lost the game, and he went way over the deep end, and his, like his blood pressure went so high that he had to go to the hospital to, you know, do what they needed to do.
And it makes you question, is it worth it? Is it worth all that aggravation, that stress, and all of that? I mean, in my mind, you know, the amount of effort that I put into it, I really like my team. I'm very happy with the Bengals. I'm never gonna drop them as my team. And people joke about them being the Bungles and all this stuff.
How many Hall of Famers are there?
From the Bengals or in general?
From the Bengals.
Two or three. Icky Woods is one of them.
Is Boomer?
Boomer might be one.
I think Boomer is, but that's...
Collinsworth isn't in the... fairly certain he's not. No, definitely not. But...
He might get in for as a broadcaster.
He might. Oh, absolutely. He's been on the air forever.
I could not stand him. Just him and Joe Buck. Oh, God. Joe Buck's a whole other story because of his hatred for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Joe Buck as a human. When him and Troy Aikman get together, that's always a good game. Who's your favorite announcer now?
You know, it's funny because I was just going to ask you about what you think of Tony Romo, because I really think Tony Romo is a phenomenal. I didn't like him as a player because everybody always questions his elite capabilities. He never won a Super Bowl, you know.
He always had follies in the playoffs.
He really did, and so did the Bengals, but that's besides the point. As an announcer, man, his football knowledge is phenomenal.
Insane.
I mean, him and Tim Tebow is another polarizing figure in football that has had an interesting life story as an announcer. I like Tim Tebow. He played for the Broncos. I remember that year.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that devastating Steelers
game? That quick
game?
Slant. I forget who the receiver was, but he caught that quick slant. The linebacker fell, and he was off to the races.
He was gone.
Getting back to baseball, he's still in the Mets organization.
That's right.
And he's 33,
mm-hmm.
and there was just a big article about the Mets ownership. They have new ownership, and they went to Tebow and said, I understand there might not be AAA baseball, and we can't offer you a spot on the 40-man roster,
mm-hmm.
but we don't want your baseball career to end because of COVID.
Right.
And so they offered him something. And I'm not a Mets fan. Vaguely touch on it, but it was a good read, you know, quick.
And it's interesting that you bring that up because there's a good number of players who have baseball.
Well, look at Kyler Murray.
I was just going to bring him up, and, you know, we could also talk about Deion Sanders, too. Well,
John Elway.
I mean, there's so much interplay. Why do you think players go towards baseball? Because Kyler Murray was drafted by the A's.
Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah.
Jeff Samardzija went the opposite route, and he fell off the last couple of years, but any Notre Dame fan will tell you, Jeff Samardzija, I mean, they called him the shark because he looked like one.
Yeah, right.
But he was a fantastic receiver, mm-hmm. probably second, third round talent, and he opted to go to baseball, and he's still playing. He's
fantastic with the career.
Yeah.
And it even goes without saying, like, the physicality of a player like Deion Sanders or Bo Jackson or these players that can – I think Deion Sanders is the only player who's ever played a baseball game and a football game.
Bo Jackson.
Oh, it's Bo Jackson. That's right.
And Deion.
And, oh, yeah, you're right. The both of them did. That's right. And it's just I can't imagine why you would choose one over the other. It's got to be money, right? Because if you look
baseball players make more money.
Exactly. So you want to imagine that they would go that route. But I think fame-wise, you would probably see more players choosing football.
I think you play football more immediate. Like when Kyler gets drafted from college to the pros, he's playing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
When Samardzija goes to the pros of baseball, he has to work his way up. You know, he gets drafted, then he has to play single A, double A, rookie ball, triple A. And so it might take him 4 years to become a pro baseball player.
Very true. And it just adds to the
grind
question.
Is much harder in baseball.
Oh, absolutely. But what do you think about the whole concept of the cap and changing the cap? Because the
salary cap?
Yeah, the money situation that goes on in football versus baseball is a massive change.
I think the Niners had a lot of success in a pre-cap era because there was no cap. Like, when you look at that team in the late 80s, early 90s with Ronnie Lott, Tom Rathman, the list goes on. And that's before we even talk about John Taylor, then Jerry Rice, and Joe Montana. You know, they didn't have a cap to worry about, so they could throw Yankees-like money at these players.
Right.
Now, baseball's getting a little bit more competitive. They have penalties if you go over certain luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting more competitive in baseball. Like, you can't just sign all these at an all-star team unless they take the necessary contractual money. I think it's going to continue to expand. I think it's going to get quite interesting, and it's getting more, like I said, I mean, Tampa Bay Rays were just in the World Series. They had one of the lowest budgets.
That's right, and it's interesting because, you know, they play Moneyball, and they try to say that, you know, you look at all these contracts and how they're structured. Bobby Bonilla is still getting paid, right? I mean, like, crazy. I think we just
Bernie Madoff.
Yeah, right? We just saw the first $300 million contract with Mahomes. Is that right?
No, I think he's $450.
No, that's he's insane amount of money.
And, you know, but he's worth it.
Is he worth it? That was going to be my next
question.
I think he is,
and I'll tell you why. Because of the human that he is. You know, I mean, when we just went through a very pivotal election, and he did all he could to make their stadium, I think it's Arrowhead still.
Yeah.
But he made that an election spot just to allow more people to vote. And he does so much for that, for Kansas City and that state of Missouri. And, you know, he's a good dude.
He is. He's a good human being. I really do like him.
And he's doing a lot with that money.
But it's a lot of money. I mean, we have this conversation all the time.
But look at soccer players.
There's so much money in all these sports. Like, do they really deserve it? Like, you look at how much your average doctor is going to make, and you look at your average football player, and it makes you question the American sort of ideologies of we hold our players in high regard. We pay them so well. Part of it's because of, you know, the marketability of a team. You know, the Cowboys are a billion, if not trillion-dollar team. They have the money to pay these players. Is the money actually worth it? And it all comes from us. It comes from our buying into their jerseys and the sports memorabilia and tickets and all this sort of stuff. I have a hard time sometimes justifying it, but at the same time, they're entertainers. They're just like
any other personal brand.
Right.
And that brand falls under the conglomerate of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So he's making that money hand over fist, plus all those wins, that Super Bowl championship that eluded them for 50 years.
That's right. Now, what do you think about like restructuring contracts? Because I know Drew Brees had a situation where in order for them to go under cap, he had to restructure his contract in order for new talent to come in.
It shows a lot of who that person is.
And dedication to the team. Yeah. Yeah.
And that organization. You know, like Tom Brady's known for doing that. I mean, his wife makes more than he does.
Yeah.
So he's done that a number of times just to get a player to New England and to help Tampa Bay out. Like, he's not the most paid quarterback by any means.
No. But it's interesting because you look at Tom Brady and you look at all these players that they're starting to pick up, and it makes you wonder about what the behind the scenes situations are, because Gronk, I never thought would have came back to football with all the stories that he talked about.
Well, even Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that's another. I mean,
Fournette we could talk about for that team, you know?
Like, yeah, that's another one. I mean, for them to all go to Tampa, I mean, you know, the weather's glorious, but
yeah. The opportunity to learn from.
To play with Tom Brady. I mean, to play with a player of that. He's just, do you think he's the greatest of all time?
So with football, I feel like it's hard to play that GOAT because the game changes. And I was just saying this week, I mean, you look at the Iron Man record in baseball with Cal Ripken, and then you look at Brett Favre. Yep. I think he's 298 or 299 consecutive games.
Yep.
And, I mean, they only play 16 games a year.
Yeah, it's insane.
But now with concussion protocol, with all these little, you know, okay, well, if you don't pass this physical, there's no way Brett Favre would got to 298 in modern. So getting back to the greatest of all time. He's definitely the greatest of our generation. But then you'll get somebody like Johnny Unitas, who played in a straight drop back era and, you know, played with a lot of different talents. It's tough to say. I think football for the greatest of all time comes down to that generational greatest. And I think basketball's like that a little bit too. Like,
Chamberlain, and you look at all LeBron, those
MJ, like, Kobe. Should... Like, it's very generational because of the talent you're playing with and the talent you're playing against. Plus, I mean, the salary cap is constantly evolving.
It's a major component in this, absolutely. It's tough with Tom Brady.
I feel like baseball is the only one that you can say, because that sport never changes.
Right, and Trout is potentially going to be, you know,
one of
the greatest of all times. I mean, you look at, but with that sport, you can look at so many different, you know, Ken Griffey Jr.'s hitting capability, and you look at all these players, and I don't know, with football, it's just so interesting when you see stats that come up. I don't know who's keeping track of these stats, but like when you see
baseball now too. Yeah, oh, I know. Like, it's getting, you know, ridiculous. The pitchers and the hitting and shifts.
Yeah, right. But like, I remember when Drew Brees passed the all-time touchdown record or something it was, or maybe it was yards passing not too long ago, and it was, you know, how long is it going to be before Tom Brady breaks that record? I mean,
well, they have one record now. I don't know which one it is, but they're neck and neck.
Like, they are.
One week, he's the all-time. The next week.
And with Drew Brees' injury, I don't know if that situation is going to pan out for him. His time has got to be up. Tom Brady's time has got to be up. I'm starting to think there are some other big names that are going to be bowing out. I think Ben Roethlisberger, his time is very short.
I think he has 2-3 years.
And it's funny because I've heard people say that like every other year. It's like, oh, he's got 2-3 years. He's got another 2-3 years. They love Ben.
I think if he gets another ring,
oh yeah,
I think he'll retire. But people close to the Steelers organization are saying he wants to match Bradshaw.
Yeah.
At 4.
I believe it.
So he has 2 now.
Yeah, I mean, in the Steelers organization, he's definitely got, you know, that sort of capability to do that. But then you look at a player like Matt Stafford, who he has all of these crazy great records. But at the end
even
of the
Ryan
day,
Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Take a second, I mean, he's better than some Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Yeah. Like, and at the end of the day, it makes you wonder, like, what's going to happen when the Hall of Fame names start to come out? We were just talking about the 2021 Hall of Fame list that came out, and I think Peyton Manning, like, it's funny because I remember growing up watching Peyton Manning and winning the Super Bowl with the Colts and thinking like, man, that's so long ago, but it really wasn't.
Right.
And I don't know, in the whole greatest of all time conversation, I think Tom Brady will go down as one of the best.
Do you agree with that generational?
I do. I think, and I was going to say, because I know you're a Joe Montana fan, that name gets thrown around in the greatest of all time conversation.
For that generation. And, you know, he played with Marino and John Elway and a lot of great quarterbacks of that generation. And he always stood out.
The one thing that always, you know, hit me with football is how much of a team sport it is versus the other sports. You really, you look at Super Bowl wins, you're not winning that Super Bowl by yourself. You're...
Well, the thing about Tom Brady, and of course I'm a Montana homer, but right. Brady did not have good receivers.
No.
On the other side, Montana had the greatest receiver of all time.
Right.
And that is not a generational thing. There is no argument for that. I mean, the things Jerry Rice did, we may never see again.
Right. Absolutely. And that's 100% true. And it'll be interesting to see as our kids grow up what names will change as, you know, we go through. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to have a very phenomenal career, but you know, it could be the situation like with Achilles Smith in the Bengals. He was like this.
And it's a team that they get drafted to as well.
Very true.
You know, like unfortunate for Burrow because of where he was going, but that old line was suspect.
Yeah, and you that's know, because they lost a lot of players, and it makes you wonder about how the team changes and progresses over time as to, you know, how that's going to affect the player overall. So, I don't know. I think that we covered a tremendous breadth of knowledge in terms of football.
Real quick, no team from the NFC should make the playoffs. Hockey and basketball have great playoff situations where they have the East, they have the West, top eight from each go, maybe the top six from each go, this year top seven. But I think NFL should definitely look into that because having a team from the NFC East, I know they all four of those teams have terrific fan bases.
They do.
And, you know, like we didn't even talk about Washington and that whole situation going on with the Redskins.
Yeah.
But they,
the Washington football team?
WFT.
WFT, yeah, right? I mean, it's just insane to think that there are three teams vying for second place with a 3-7 record, and one of those teams going into the playoffs with a losing record, it slaps in the face of every
And we
team.
Say that, but the Seahawks went against the Saints.
Yep.
Had to have been 10 years ago because I was still in my Dunmore apartment, and they beat the Saints.
Yep.
And they were 7-9.
And it and happens.
The Saints were.
It just, it like I said before, there's going to be times where your team is going to be in a division that is stout. The AFC North has generally been a stout division. And, you know, the Ravens.
And look at the NFC West.
Yeah.
I mean, the Niners are in last place and they represent the NFC in the Super Bowl last year.
Right. I mean, and that's only one year apart. Jimmy G had some injuries and yeah, there's a lot of situations
of course,
going
but
on.
The Rams 2 years ago. And then last year they didn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
Because of the way it's set up.
I think they paid Jared Goff a little too much money, but that's another
another
story entirely. Well, I am just about finished with mine. What is your overall take on this smoke?
So I towards the end I broke into a sweat. My stomach turned.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
The flavor changed. I'm like, yeah. I'm nubbing mine right now. I'm still
It's still good, going. But it hit me like a wrecking ball.
Yeah, this is hitting hard. Like, oh, I think yeah. It concentrated really hard in the last
the
third.
The first two thirds were one of the best I've had, but I'm struggling to continue to smoke this. Mm-hmm. I'm getting that buzz that spins, yeah. And you know, I'm sweating, like full body sweat.
Well, that's because you're talking about the Niners too, right?
Niners always make me sweat.
Right? But I think that's true with a lot of cigars is that sometimes that last third, when you hit that spot, you know it's time to stop.
Yeah.
But this has been a phenomenal smoke. I'm glad to say that I could put this under my belt as something I've had because I've always wanted to have
absolutely
one like this.
Yeah. It overall, I'd say it's a great smoke.
I recommend
probably
it to anybody.
8-9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Take one more hit. But I think that we pretty much hit most of the nails on the head. There's so much we could talk about.
Oh, football is such a vast category and there's so much knowledge. And I think we could have broke this into a 10-part series if
absolutely.
We wanted to.
I mean,
but overall, I'm happy with
our
football count. And I got to say, I'm impressed with your knowledge.
Well, thank you. I mean,
You do get ragged on a lot in our group text and in person about your lack of knowledge and all that. But no, you showed up today.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. You did a good job.
I knew you would have a lot to say, and I'm glad that I was able to have a conversation with you having that past of, you know, playing football in high school and having that sort of family life in football. And now you know a little bit about how I win all my fantasy games. It's all stats. Stats.
Oh, yeah,
stats.
And I will never reveal my secrets.
Right?
it's my closest friends are the ones I played football with, and we're still like brothers, you know, and it's definitely a great sport. Dangerous at times, but I would never say I regret playing.
Glad to hear it.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that wraps it up for us. This is Ash Hats Podcast, and I hope you all enjoyed this time with us. We greatly enjoyed the conversation. Next time, we'll have another...
We'll see you next year. Our next one won't be out until New Year's Day, so...
We're working on potentially some collaborations with another podcast. We might be able to get some more people in here, because, you know, we love hearing ourselves talk, and we love talking to each other, but we have... friends who have lots to say, and you know, it's only a question as to what our next topic will be. We love to hear from our fans, so remember, there is Ash Hats Podcast on Instagram. If you'd like to send us an email, it's ashhatspodcast@gmail.com. give us an idea as to what you'd like to hear from us, or if you have an idea as to what cigar we should be smoking, because we know the culture in cigars changes so constantly, and we get so many good ideas from social media, and we'd like to hear from our fan base.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much.
Smoke them if you got them.